your future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Quit it now!
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Welcome into the bullpen. I am Brian McDonald, joined by Sean Mapes, Cam Smith, and John Belmer today. We're back. Johnny Belmer and I were talking before the show. I think we've only done one bullpen since Thanksgiving, which I know our man Not Santa on Twitter is definitely tracking that because he calls us lazy every week when we don't have a show. So if I'm wrong on that we've only had one show since Thanksgiving, I'm sure he'll correct me. But how are you guys doing? We haven't done this in a while.
I am terrific.
Cam, I heard right before we went on air, you got sick from the Christmas party. How you feeling?
Yeah, how dareth.
I have a guess. Was it the eggnog chugging contest? What got you sick?
No, I wasn't there for that. I was there at the most popular time of the day when there was, it was close to double digits of people in there.
Are you taking a shot?
I get it. Like,
that was kind of a shock, Cam.
I'm not surprised because people are going out of town for like the holiday. So I had an idea that the later into the day we were going to see less people. I didn't get a stomach bug. I got some sort of like sinus infection bug.
That's boring. All right. Well, I mean,
it took me out of Christmas and Christmas Eve.
Yeah,
so.
That's a you problem. That's kind of boring. I was hoping for something more exciting for the listener. Now, we will have to get into what happened to John Belmer later on the show because he had, I don't know if he told you guys the details, but John Belmer may or may not exist as a person because of some.
Right there.
Yeah, I don't know. What he told me about his identity being taken might mean legally he does not exist as a person.
I might be wiped away.
I see a shape.
Nice. Now you're debt free.
I see a shape of something that used to be John Belmer, but legally I don't know if he's actually John Belmer anymore.
Rip off the mask like it's a
like Face Off with Nicolas Cage.
Do you have a particular birthmark that we can identify you by?
I don't want to know that answer.
Tattoos?
I don't want to. You got tattoos?
Yeah, I got a couple dumb tattoos.
Okay. Okay. You know what? Screw the Texans. Cam has I think he has the Bucky's beaver somewhere.
He is the most identifiable.
He is the most identifiable. Yes.
If I ever get called into a room. I'm like, yep, that's Cam.
That's Cam. I know. Do you need to see his face? No, I'm good. I'm good. What's your dumbest tattoo, John?
When I was just turned 18, senior
a lot of good
year
decisions
in high school,
happened. Yeah.
I have my ex-girlfriend's initials tattooed on my hand right there.
You know, I always wondered what that was.
On your hand right here.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, right, so that, like Cam, I've always seen that tattoo, but I didn't know what it was. So it's a high school girlfriend's initials?
It is, yeah.
On your hand? I mean, like,
that's pretty bad.
I would have gotten covered it up by now, but I just forget that it's there like 99% of the time.
He went against the grain. Okay. He literally got the one thing that they tell you never to get.
Yeah.
Man, that is about as bad as it gets.
He told me not
Belmer.
To do it, too. He told me not
Wait,
to.
The guy, the tattoo artist told you not to do it?
He tried to not take your money?
He did.
Well, no, I would just be like, how about we just move it up the arm? I don't know, a foot?
Were you under the influence of alcoholic beverages?
No, that's the sad part. I wasn't drunk, no.
So this was a sober thought.
It was, yeah.
How many of your tattoos were sober, Cam?
He was love drunk, all right?
He was love drunk.
He was drunk on love.
How many of my...
Yeah, I don't know how many tattoos... Have you ever counted your tattoos?
Yeah, I have like 44. No,
How many were sober?
Well...
It's a number that's
all of them that I've in person that I've gotten, I've been sober. Now the thought of creating some of them might have been under the influence.
Okay.
Yes.
You still went through with it even when you sobered up?
Yes. Like I love
some of them are good ideas.
I love my Pimp C tattoo. I think it looks very much like him. That was definitely a late night Saturday, I'm tipsy. What can I go get tattooed tomorrow?
The answer was Pimp C.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. You have Selena tattooed anywhere on your body? Because I know you love Selena.
Sure do.
I don't. Okay, maybe we shouldn't ask.
We should do like a bingo of things you think are tattooed on Cam.
Yeah.
Well, we know the Bucky's Beaver. He's got the Oilers oil derrick. I know that. He's got the Astros star.
Yeah, there's a Charger somewhere on there, right?
There's a Charger.
I have a Chargers on my shoulder. Yeah.
Is it the Lightning Bolt or what is it?
It's the Lightning Bolt, but it's also like our Houston chapter logo.
Oh, okay.
But I am going next week, so I'll be interested to see if you guys can guess what I'm getting. I've mentioned it before. I'm getting it next week.
Okay, maybe an impromptu Mount Rushmore plus one of things Cam should get tattooed on his body. See if we can think about it between now and 1:30.
I'm running out of room, so if you guys have ideas,
you have to be careful with what you choose.
Yeah. I mean, there's always room for a high school girlfriend's name on your hand. I don't know if you knew that was
plenty
an option.
Of space, plenty of space on your hands.
Absolutely not.
Kicking me while I'm down, B-Man.
Again, Johnny, I do not know if you exist.
We're kicking the imposter, John Belmer.
There's a greater than 0% chance we've been doing a show with a fake John Belmer for the last however long. That real John Belmer, that this John Belmer stole his identity from, is out there somewhere.
I stand up and take off my mask, and it's David Gow.
that would be a turn.
What a twist!
That would be a turn. I was like, sir, you've got better things to do with your time than to come do this show with
how
us.
How do you get shorter?
Undercover boss, baby.
All right. How are we have a job?
I don't know. So Texans are happening.
How do they have a job?
There's some guys on that roster that should not have jobs next year. Cam, there we go. That's or Sean, whatever your name is. It's been a while. We've done one show since Thanksgiving. I had a 50-50 chance. Yeah. You know, it happens. I think the biggest question, because who cares if they win? The biggest question is, how do you handle this week as far as resting or playing your starters? Let's hear from D'Amico Ryan's one of two cuts. First, are they going to rest their starters or are they not?
Yeah, going into this game, as I mentioned to all our guys, that everybody has to be ready to go. And that's where we are. Everybody will be out there playing and we'll see how the game goes. But for us right now, we got to go play better. And our last outing on the field was not good enough. Not representative of who we are defensively, offensively. Just it's not a good representation of our team entirely. So we got to go out. We got to play better football.
So that's pretty much a definitive answer to me. I expect to. Now, he did leave some wiggle room in there where he said, we'll see how the game goes. So this could be a situation where they have a couple good drives and it's kind of like preseason. They pull guys, but I would expect pretty much everyone to be out there at the start of the game. Now, another cut here from D'Amico talking about the obvious thing that we'll discuss. There's risk, obviously, in playing your starters in a game that means nothing for your standings or your playoff seedings. Here's D'Amico Ryan's on that thought.
Yeah, there is a balance there. But for us right now, I think it's a feel for where your team is at this point of the season. And for me right now, you know, our team needs to be playing better as before we head into the postseason. So, you know, we'll see where we are and how the game goes, and of course be smart about what we're doing and be intentional about everything that we're doing, knowing what we have ahead of us. But I still want our guys to go out and play good football.
Now, I didn't expect to come on to this show or really at any point and talk about how I fully backing the idea of playing your starters in week 18 when you have nothing to gain from the standings or your playoff seeding. But I'm with D'Amico on this one. I mean, you can't even isolate it to, well, it's just the Baltimore game. Because I think if it was just a one game, like they had one dud game, but for the overall majority of the season they played pretty well, then I would still be on the side of rest everybody. But their offense has played like trash for months. I don't think they can go into a playoff game against – there's three options, the Steelers, the Ravens, or the Chargers, Cam. And they can't go into the playoffs – with this sort of offensive performance being what they've done last or what they've done for the last 2 months. So I don't know what they can gain from maybe getting some mojo or some momentum or just figuring things out from a week 18 game against the Titans. But I think they got to try it based upon how bad they've been for the last couple months.
See, I go the other way because of how bad they've been. What is six drives again? Like if we're going to pull them at some point, we're talking about,
maybe. Okay,
then what's a full game against the Titans going to do that 16 weeks? No, sorry. 17 weeks of football haven't done? Because I'm including the bye week.
Right, 16.
And the bye week. Okay. They didn't come out looking any better after the bye week. So, you know, I think that all you're risking is we have to watch Davis Mills play a playoff game if – or – Nico Collins gets hurt or Joe Mixon gets hurt, this is already going to be an unwatchable offense no matter what happens. There's not going to be some magic pixie dust that happens in the last week of the season. I think you just sit them just to – the only thing you control is being healthy at this point. You can't control actually having a good offense that runs on schedule or is well-run at all. All you can do is, hey, we're not going to have our quarterback get killed in a meaningless game.
Oof, I don't know. I'm split on this one because in the past, I've always been someone that's, all right, if you're in the playoffs and your seeding can't change, rest your starters. But with this team, how abysmal the offense has been, I'm afraid that if they rest their starters, have another poor offensive performance, it's just going to snowball into the playoffs because this team hasn't shown me anything this year to give me confidence being like, oh, they can bounce back after like a terrible performance. And so that's where I'm kind of split because B-Mac, you said you wanted them to play, right?
Yeah. I want the offense to play because the defense I have no questions or concerns about. Like if Will Anderson doesn't play at all or they treat it like truly preseason game one, they come out and play one series and then they're out, good with that.
Yeah.
But the offense, I hear what Sean's saying. Like, can they realistically figure out and fix their problems? No. But I would like to see them look a little bit sharper. So at least somewhere in their mind, they're thinking, okay, we maybe have something figured out. I mean, if
can't they do
else,
that in practice? I mean, can't they do that in practice?
They don't hit. And I mean, look, you're working a new wide receiver in with Deontay Johnson.
Oh, Deontay Johnson's a play.
Yes.
Deontay Johnson's a play.
Well, do you want him taking snaps and catching balls from Davis Mills or CJ Stroud?
He can do that in practice.
I guess.
When your quarterback is not getting hit.
Yeah, look, I guess I look from it. I hear what you're saying, Sean, like where if Nico or Mixon or certainly if CJ gets hurt, then you have no chance to win the playoff game. I kind of think they have no chance to win the playoff game now. So to me, at least in my opinion, I'm not risking anything.
I disagree. I think they have a chance to win one playoff game if they are fully healthy and they play the Steelers. Or the Chargers, bum-ass team.
Cam.
How dare you?
No, actually, I don't want them to play the Chargers because Cam will be unbearable.
yeah, Cam will not be on the show the week after.
Like, I barely even care.
I'll be here early.
Cam will be so annoying.
Cam's going to have five new tattoos. He's going to tattoo the box score.
Hey, I listen to y'all talk
Harbaugh's
about UT
face.
Football. Y'all can deal with my Charger football talk.
Cam's got a good point on that one.
Thank you, John.
But I think they do have a chance to win a playoff game fully healthy, especially if, again, they play the Steelers. They can win a 19-16 game against the Steelers.
And they're going to have to. You look at some of their –
That's
mean,
all they do. That's why I don't think that playing against the Titans is going to unlock an offense.
That's probably overselling what I would hope to gain out of playing their offensive starters against the Titans. I just want them to –
I don't think it's going
to
unlock anything, but
I just don't want them to go into the playoff game still mired in a complete funk that the offense –
how long are we going with this funk? This funk has been the entire season.
I would say the
entire season against decent defenses.
Yeah, like post-Patriots game, which was week six. Like, I'm trying to think if they've had – all the Lions game, they were fine offensively in the first half.
They scored 23 points.
Yeah, they scored 23 points in that game. Yeah, I mean – the Cowboys, you scored 34, but one of those was a defensive score.
Also not a decent team.
Also not a decent team. The Titans, you scored 27. You still lost. I mean,
23 against the Jags?
I mean, you scored zero offensive points against the Ravens, 19 against the Chiefs. And again, that was the first half, second half thing, which they've done a lot this year. The Dolphins, you scored 20, but the offense really wasn't that impressive. And I believe you got a pick six in that game from Jimmy Ward, so not all of those 20 points are offensive. I mean, yeah, it's been a while.
That's why I don't think that there's like some sort of like, oh, then they'll be seeing the ball well heading towards the playoffs.
You don't think there's such thing as like a get right game?
No.
I do.
I think it's marginal. I completely agree that it's marginal, but if they can go into a game coming off of a good offensive performance, I do think it marginally increases their confidence, marginally increases their "quote unquote momentum" and gives them a slightly better chance in the wild card game.
What specifically do they have to do to?
I think they have to get
a little bit of mojo back.
Show more efficiency in the passing game and finding someone outside of Nico and giving more confidence that the offensive line could do their job.
Well,
I have some issues with that.
Please. Well, maybe we should. Well, you know what? Let's carry this over. We're already a couple of minutes over, and I have a feeling this would keep going. And we'll keep carrying the Texans conversation as long as it warrants. We'll also get into the college football playoffs, the NFL. And, of course, in the next hour, we will have our Mount Rushmore plus one. And it might be, if my voice can take it, we might have time for a hype train or a segment at some point in the second hour. So make sure you stay tuned. It's Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, Cam Smith, John Belmore with you here on the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio, welcome back in the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You can find me on Twitter, Brian McDonald. I'm at Sack by BMAC. Sean Mapes is at Sean A. Mapes. Cam Smith is at Clutch City Cam. And John Belmer behind the glass is at Third Coast Johnny. So before we went to the break, we were talking about the idea of rest or rust and maybe what could be gained from playing the Texans offensive starters in this week 18 game against the Titans. And Sean, I think, was about to lay into me for my idea that there's something to gain for the offensive line in the passing efficiency.
Specifically what does BMAC want to see in the Texans offense? How much do you want them to play? And then what do you need to see to have the objective accomplished that, yes, they have some mojo going into? Because we're not saying fully, figure things out, but just have something. Get the
just
bad
not
taste.
Suck. That's what I'm not asking for a lot. Like, just don't suck. Again, right now, they suck.
Against a good defense this entire season, they've sucked.
I know. And they're facing at least a decent defense on the road. And because of the owner's pettiness against the city of Houston that probably wants to win this game, even though they don't care, it actually would help them if they lose.
Who doesn't care?
I'm saying the Titans shouldn't care because it doesn't mean anything for them, and they should lose because it would help them
right now,
their NFL draft pick.
Right now, they're the two pick.
But I think because of the Titans ownership's pettiness towards the city of Houston, they would like to kick your ass this week. So I think they will try. And the Titans defense, while it's had some games like against the Lions where they gave up a ton of points, overall for the course of the season, it's been pretty good.
Yeah. Honestly, one of the worst performances of giving up 27 against the Texans.
Yeah.
That's like
it was.
Not a good one.
So if they had a good offensive showing, I think this would qualify as doing it against at least a decent to upper half defense and maybe create some sort of good feelings and thought, maybe confidence that they've lost over the course of the season.
And it might put some shivers into their next opponent.
Yeah, but like those bum-ass Chargers. Yeah.
What about the opposite side of that, B-Mac?
Okay.
What if they go out? What if CJ goes out there and throws two picks? And
then they're right where they are now.
I think it leaves a worse taste in your mouth. I think you go through this
if your starters
this time
lose
here,
to the Titans team again.
They scored 0 points against the Ravens. It can't get any lower than that. You went out on Christmas Day on Netflix and scored 0 offensive points against a Ravens defense, which is a pretty good defense overall, but their pass defense over the course of the season has been trash. I know it's played well recently, so maybe that's the line that you could say, well, the full season numbers are kind of misleading with the Ravens defense, but their pass defense over the course of the season have been garbage, and you went out and scored 0 offensive points. I hear what you're saying, Johnny. Like if CJ went out and played like trash, maybe that could create like an even worse feeling, even less confidence going to the playoffs. I'd argue it can't get any lower right now.
I'd argue it really can't get any higher either, though. You're not going to do anything in this last game that's going to give the team any kind of extra juice.
If they went out and put up 35 offensive points, let's just say
they have the Deshaun Watson 2018 game against,
or
2017.
They score like 50 in that game. Let's go with another Titans game. There's a Titans game in 2014 where Ryan Fitzpatrick threw 6 touchdowns against them. Let's just go pie in the sky, most optimistic you could possibly say. They go out and do the Deshaun Watson game. We're talking offensive performance. Or the Titans, Ryan Fitzpatrick's 6 touchdown games. I would say, look, it might not mean anything once the whistle blows against the Chargers, Steelers, or Ravens, because those teams are all probably at least a little to a lot better than you. But I do think it creates some sort of confidence momentum going into that game. It's like, okay, I know we struggled against the Ravens. We struggled for most of the second half of the seasons on offense, but maybe a little things are clicking. I don't know. I think there is some benefit to that.
Yeah, you don't build confidence off of bad losses.
Or sitting on the bench.
Yeah, you build them off of a win. And even if it's a meaningless game against the Titans, a win is still a win, and it's going in. I don't know why I pronounced it so. Titans. I don't know.
Not the loosum.
Gross. That's what I'm saying. I'm 60-40 Brian, because I understand Sean's point of view. I understand that you have nothing to gain standing-wise and anything like that, but I just feel like this team has just been so mediocre and boring, and the offense has just been so inconsistent that if you can just give me one game going into the playoffs where they actually put something together, it might be false confidence, but there's still more confidence going into the playoffs after a win than a loss. And so that's just kind of how I look at it.
Real quick, Sean, I promise I didn't interrupt you. I just think CJ's health is more important than what you're giving me here. If he goes out there and the offensive line can't seem to prove that they can block for him throughout the year, if the same thing happens and this time we end up with a rib injury or a leg injury or just anything to CJ, that's worth sitting him.
Well, yeah, that's really where it comes down to, like, the like, 10%, 5%, 10% chance that CJ Stroud not even just misses the game, because obviously, like, Davis Mills.
And for what it's worth, but to make your case, he seems like he's admitting he's a little banged up.
Yeah, I mean, there's a moment in the Ravens game. Did he miss a play?
No,
he just got up very slow.
He got up very slow. I think he did miss a play.
He might have missed a play.
I think he missed a play, yeah.
And so, like, you're already kind of dancing with that. And then, again, like, the 25% chance that they have anything to build off of, because I really think that they're just going to go out there, play a normal Texans game. They have one good drive, two good drives, and then a whole bunch of punts, and hopefully your defense sets you up with the short field. But it's a defense that you kind of want to sit some of the guys too,
100%
more than the offense. So I just think that, like, the risk reward of, like, well, what if these guys, you know, get a little bit of confidence? Also, like, how much is the confidence going to help you when T.J. Watt and Alex Highsmith and Minkah Fitzpatrick come to town?
Yeah.
Like, how much is the good feelings of, like, well, we did it against the Titans. They're even wearing the Oilers jerseys.
Fine, then we can go back to the old saying, if you want to win, put Mills in. And if C.J. is really banged up, then fine. Don't play C.J., but I still don't want this to be an all-bench starting game.
Yeah. I mean, just like the real, you know, the realities of the 53-man roster, like, you obviously just can't, like, pull everyone that plays.
No, you can't literally bench everyone. Because it was not only 53, but you're only sending, 46 is active, so you can't bench literally everybody. But the defense is, or at least your key defensive guys, let's say Will Anderson, certainly Danielle Hunter, Stingley. I'm not sure who else you want to throw into that mix, but those three would for sure not see the field. I guess you got to play Aziz because he hasn't played football in three weeks. So.
Aziz and Christian Harris you probably have to play but manage.
I would say that would be accurate. And then I'm not sure, you know, everything else I'm kind of open to the conversations about. But I would definitely
got
to
sit him.
I would sit Hunter, Anderson, Stingley for sure. There's no reason for them to see the
field. I think Autry hasn't practiced this week, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
I know early in the week he didn't practice.
I would go ahead and sit him. I mean, he's been back for obviously half the season, so it's not like he's still rounding into shape like Christian Harris.
And there's a little bit of, like, if these guys are, like, a little hurt, just sit him. Like, yeah, you know, like the Will Anderson, like, dealing with an ankle, but he's going to give it a go.
With an ankle.
Yeah, but it's like, just if it's close, just sit him.
Yeah.
I'll meet you halfway.
Okay.
All I need is one, maybe two drives for Nico Collins to get, I think it's 43 receiving
yards. Oh, is that how close he is to 1,000?
That's how close he is to 1,000.
Yeah, I need that too.
I'd make some money if he did that.
Joe Mixon needs 125.
That wasn't supposed to be close, Sean.
That wasn't close. He missed five games. And it's still close. That's how right we were.
He went out before halftime in week five as that long touchdown against the Bills. And at that point, it was already like 550 yards. All we needed was 1,000. And he missed five games and comes back and the offense has gone to bleep.
Well,
there's
also the screen pass against the Cowboys. Yes, that was the first play of the game that got called back. That's 75.
I forgot about that one.
We'd already be there.
Wasn't that a holding on Tunsil?
It was a legal formation.
On Tunsil.
Or I thought it was illegal downfield.
It was on Tunsil. That's all I know.
Yeah, it was on Tunsil. Of course it was on Tunsil. It was an offensive line penalty.
Facts.
D'Amico Ryans really should be thinking about our pocketbook.
He really should.
Yeah.
Joe Mixon, I don't have any money on him getting 1,000. I'm sure Joe Mixon does. He needs, I think, 7 yards. So that's
he needs 125
for
1,000.
Really?
No.
I thought he was at like 997.
His incentive's like 1,100, which is probably the 127 he needs or something like that. But you're right. You're right in that he needs about 100 yards for an incentive, but it's not to get to 1,000 yards.
He's at 993.
Oh, so, okay.
Oh, he'll get to 1,000.
So he needs 107 yards.
Yeah, give him 5 carries. He'll get those 7 yards.
Of course. Yeah.
Maybe.
There are some interesting incentives that in the NFL to watch, which I think are, and when we get to hype train a little while here at 1 o'clock, will be largely what I'm basing these on. Because the week 18 motivations, unless you're making a playoff spot, you have to really kind of look and see what these guys can make as far as their bank accounts. And that's what
Mike Evans is crazy one.
That's one of mine. Yeah. Mike Evans is one of mine.
Is there only like 2 games this week where both teams have something to play for?
Well, obviously Minnesota and Detroit.
And I think Pittsburgh,
all the games today have Pittsburgh, something
Cincinnati.
For it.
Well, yeah. Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, but only if Ravens don't win. Because if the Ravens win, I guess Pittsburgh would still have something to play for if they want to be the team that gets to beat Houston. So they would want to win to
beat Houston.
I mean, come on. We all think the Texans.
No, I kind of think the Texans can beat the Steelers.
Just because of the defensive performance?
Yes. Defense at home against Russell Wilson.
See, y'all want that one, but I want Pittsburgh to lose so that the Chargers come
can be
here.
The team to beat the Texans.
Well, because I want them to come here.
And then the Chargers will win. I'm doing the math of the Chargers will win. The Ravens, I don't know. Let's see another matchup. They're close.
They're close?
Yeah, against the Texans, you know. Best 2 out of 3 against I want another shot at Baltimore.
Oh, man, yeah, I won't. Look, there's 3
Maybe
teams.
It'll be close at halftime this time.
Okay, let's quickly have this conversation, and then we'll carry over the rest of what we're going to talk about to the other side. But as we said, there's 3 teams the Texans can face. We obviously throwing out the Ravens because no one wants to see the Ravens. And they showed some things in that second half. It's very unlikely. I'm just going to ignore and blow right past that, Sean. I'm not even going to entertain it.
I didn't even watch the second
I know. Who did? I mean, the only thing that was entertaining about that game was Liv Morgan being on the field. But the Ravens would have to lose to Cleveland in order for that to happen. So beyond not wanting it to happen,
it won't happen. I think they're 20-point favorites.
They are 20-point. Well, they were started higher. It was like 21, and when we bet it yesterday on the Bees, it was down to 20.
And that's what the Browns get for benching an all-time great classic as Jameis Winston.
That is the punishment. That is the football gods.
What a national treasure. Them. Just interviewing with Popeye's chicken. Just no... But no F's given.
I guess this is really a question just for Sean and John because I know what Cam's going to say. So it then narrows down to Steelers Chargers. Like who do you think they have a better chance of beating?
Steelers number one, Chargers number two. Season's over. Everyone else. Like
the only other option is the Ravens.
No, I mean even if they win, like the only two teams they have a chance of beating. Oh, I mean,
there's only 3 teams
Broncos.
They can face though. So they can't face the Broncos. The Broncos.
I'm saying. Even if they win against the Steelers, the season's over.
He's saying whoever they face
the only two teams in the playoffs they can beat. John, what do you say?
I'm actually with Sean. I'd rather face the Steelers. I think they can at least there's a competitive game there. If it's Chargers or Ravens, I think it's over.
Yeah, I know. I think if the Texans are gonna kind of like 2012 Bengals playoff games, kind of just win this one like 13-10. If that's how they're going to have to win a playoff game, and I think that's how they have to win a playoff game, then I think they've had a better chance of doing that against Russ than Justin Herbert, and that's kind of what this comes down to. Like, I think the coaching is even. Both teams have great coaches. Both teams have great offense or great defenses. Both teams have a number one wide receiver that scares me a little bit, but really comes down to I'd rather face Russ at this age than Justin Herbert.
Ladd McConkey scares you a little bit?
Against this team, yeah.
Okay. Ladd should scare you.
Okay. Cam Smith, Chargers.
Yeah.
You have Derek Stingley.
It's Ladidi.
Yeah, but here, I'm not confident that Stingley would travel with him is the problem. Ladd's going to spend a lot of time in the slot.
Okay.
I don't want to get into a whole thing, but that's kind of my worry.
The Okuda McConkey. I like that less.
Yes, exactly. All right, we're going to carry over some Texans conversation to the next break. Talk about Deontay Johnson. What's our reasonable expectation with him making his Texans debut? And then get into some NFL as well. That one, the bullpen returns on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. It's the Bullpen here. Sean Mapes, Cam Smith, I am Brian McDonald, and Johnny Bilmer is with us. If you want to join in on the conversation, you can call us or text us on the HRMP listener line. That is 713-780-3776. We talk a lot of Texans so far, but we will get into some NFL and college football as well. So have any thoughts or opinions on what we've said so far, what we get into later on the show, again, call or text us on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So one aspect I think that does matter for this game, we've spent most of the first two segments arguing about what should matter in this game. I think what we would say unanimously we do agree on is getting Deontay Johnson, the newest Texan, integrated into the offense. Someone that's had some pretty good success in Pittsburgh, had maybe three or four good games with Carolina before he got moved to Baltimore and quit on the Ravens. He's someone that certainly talent-wise is your second-best wide receiver. There's no question about that. After losing Diggs, after losing Tank Dell, he's more talented than Xavier Hutchinson or John Metchie or Robert Woods. But what can you reasonably expect from him and how quickly he can get integrated into this offense? Let's hear from D'Amico Ryans right now on his expectations for Deontay Johnson.
No, it's late in the season, our last game. We add a new guy to our roster, but I told the guys, throw the kitchen sink at him. Let's see what he can absorb, see what he can handle, and go out here versus Tennessee, and let's see what he can do. We know he's a talented player. He's proven that at multiple stops. It's just a matter of him just coming in and, man, how much can he pick up and how can he come out and help us? Yep. And we'll see that this game, yep, try to get him some opportunities there. And as I mentioned, Deontay, man, it's a fresh start with me. Yep. Every guy that I get is fresh start. I really don't care what happened in the past. Like, it's about the present, right, and how do you attack it and how can you come and help our football team?
So, I mean, it sounds like, it sounds like D'Amico doesn't care about the quitting in Pittsburgh, the quitting in Carolina, the quitting in Baltimore. I mean,
fresh start.
Doesn't matter. Right. 0-0, as Paul always likes to say. But Sean, what do you think we can reasonably expect from Deontay Johnson week 18 and going forward into the playoffs? What version of Deontay Johnson are we getting?
The type that probably only knows a portion of the playbook and not the entire playbook. I don't think it's reasonable to think that he's going to come in and be, you know, the actual number two receiver. Like you said, in terms of talent, he is. I just don't know if he is there yet, just being fully acclimated and integrated into the offense. So I think week 18, he should definitely be out there and definitely just doing as much as he can. And I might even just like try to feature him as much as you can. Now, like, obviously this offense is not good. So, and I'm saying don't even play, or if you do play, only play him for two drives, the actual starters on offense. So
would you keep him out there past the time the starters get pulled?
Yeah. Okay. I was gonna say I'm saying that he should be featured in the garbage time, which me starts in the second quarter of this game. Like, he should just be, I mean, honestly, might start a kickoff, but I think that
might have started already.
Deontay Johnson should be just, again, doing as much as he can. And in a playoff scenario, I don't know if you want to put him out there and if he knows three routes, just be like, all right, when we put you out there, you're running one of three routes, and that is it. Like, we just need you to run in a straight line. And it's like, we can have John Metchie do that, or we can have Deontay Johnson do that.
Go slant post.
Yes, that is it. And so I think that's probably his role. I mean, we did it. We talked about it with Joe. We set the over under. How many catches do you think he has as a Texan? Two games.
We did. What did you set the line at? What'd
we did line at? 3.5.
Oh, I'll go over that.
Okay, in the playoff game, how many?
There's gonna be no other option. I think 3.5 is a good line, though. Okay. I would probably set the line there and be very, very nervous about taking the over just because they don't have another option.
So that was the line, and I said in week 18, like, he might get 6 catches. Like, I have no idea. But in the playoffs, like, I think we're looking at like 2 or 3 catches.
Yeah, probably so. This is a guy, I mean, I think people maybe forgot, not you guys, but people in general might have forgotten about how good he was for a number of years. I mean, this is a guy with 3 80-plus catch seasons. 2021, he was 107 catches, 1,100 yards, 8 touchdowns. And he had some games this year, too. Like, when he was bad early before Bryce Young got benched. But then when they brought in Andy Dalton, he's got an 8 for 122 game, a 7 for 83, and a 6 for 78 touchdowns in each of those games. So, look, there's a lot of baggage. I mean, he was in the doghouse in Pittsburgh. He requested out of Carolina, didn't like it there, and then just fully quit on the Ravens after he got traded to Baltimore. But, I mean, it's a guy with a lot of talent, Cam. What is your expectation for Deontay Johnson?
To be quite honest, I have no idea. I really don't.
Complete wild card?
Yeah, for everything that's been mentioned already, the fact that he did have some good years in Pittsburgh, he did have some really good games in Carolina, but then basically as soon as he got to Baltimore, he was a ghost. I mean, I don't even think he suited up.
He did.
I know he suited up, but I don't think that he played.
Yes, he did.
In every game.
One catch, 6 yards.
That's what I'm saying.
Is his like, time with Baltimore.
He was
active for 4 games.
Yeah, he had one catch total, I believe, for one catch for 6 yards for his entire Baltimore career.
So, and I'm just kind of like, this whole situation is just kind of weird because, like, Baltimore went out of their way to go get him to what I think was going to make him a solid number two. And then, like you said, one catch for 6 yards. So it's just like, was it the system? Was it Deontay Johnson? Like, what?
I mean, I think part of it was Baltimore more so than wanting him. The impression I get is they more so want to block others from getting him. They wanted to block KC. They wanted to block Buffalo. I mean, this may be agents telling reporters and then passing along to us. You always have to take these things with a grain of salt, but that's some of the messaging that's got out.
That feels like a fantasy football move.
It does.
When you see your opponent in the championship has a hurt quarterback, so you just put in waiver claims
for everyone.
For all
the top quarterbacks.
I've done it before. 100%. Wow.
The game's the game. The game's the game.
Yeah.
I'm not quite. I don't know if I'm quite believing the Galaxy Brain Baltimore Ravens.
I mean, they didn't need them, really. They had Zay Flowers. Rashad Bateman's had a pretty decent year. They've obviously have a couple talented tight ends.
They only gave up a fifth for him. So, and I guess that's my thing with the Texans is you picked him up off the street. So whatever you get out of him, I guess technically is a positive. It's a win.
Yeah.
So,
he's for the streets.
He's for the streets, yeah.
Even despite him being for the streets this year, he has 31 receptions on the season. John Mechie and
Xavier
Hutchinson combined.
Oh, let me guess. 19?
Oh, come on.
22.
John Mechie has 22.
Oh, shoot.
Okay, what do they have?
33. So them combined are at 33. Deontay Johnson playing 11 games, including 4 of them,
which he barely played. Yeah, like he really only played like 5 or 6 games this year.
Yes, and
like,
he has 2 less receptions.
Yeah, this is the Texans are kind of obviously because of the injuries to Diggs and Tank backed into a spot where there are no wins. But I think, look, if you're going to say, okay, we have no wins here, but what gives us our best chance to actually have a number two wide receiver to complement Nico? It's obviously this move. I mean, it's not Mechie. It's not Xavier Hutchinson. It's not Robert Woods at 30 years old or whatever Robert Woods is at now. Yeah, old Bobby Trees. So, I mean, look, it's probably not going to work. It's probably not going to make a big difference. I agree with the line that you and Joe set, probably 3.5, which is not a big impact game. And, unless those 3 are in the end zone. but it's the best thing you have. It's the best. Oh. I mean, throw the dart at the board, and no, what else are you going to do?
It is rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, yeah, but, yeah, like, the chairs were all over the place.
Yeah.
Like there were barely any chairs, actually. So you're just adding a chair? But, yeah, I think it's fair to have pretty low expectations for this.
Quickly, before we go to the break, I was curious with this. This came up on the Killer Bees yesterday. I was curious to get your guys' opinion on this, because I didn't really think about this going in, but when Jeremy asked the question, it kind of made me think about it. I was like, yeah, I don't actually really care about that much. But how much do you guys still, to this day, actually care about the Titans' quote-unquote rivalry? Because I was thinking about it, I was like, I think the win last year, with all the things that went into it, you know, them fully putting all the Houston Oilers colors out there, Mike Vrabel wearing the Bum Phillips hat on the field, and then you going in there and beating them with Case Keenum, I think that kind of ended it for me. Like, I still care about the game. I still, quote, you know, I still view them as more, or I hate them more than the average NFL team, but I don't really review them as, like, a quote-unquote hated rival. It doesn't spark a lot of a lot of animosity in me.
No, it's a cute little rival. It's like a little high school.
Like, I view the Colts as a more intense rival right now. And I know the Texans beat them 2-0 this year. And beat them in the last game last year to get into the playoffs. But because I think you have to have those games, though, to really have that rivalry. The Titans and the Texans really haven't been good at the same time very often since the Texans came into the league.
Yeah, no. I mean, if these two teams were in the playoff contention every year and battling for the division, then I think that it'd be something that you could say is like a legit rivalry. But for me, this just sounds like some like high school football team. Like, oh, they're in our same.
Yeah, they're in the district.
They're in our district, and no, we have to hate somebody. See, so let's just despise these guys.
To me, that's the Jags rivalry, the fake Jags rivalry.
Well, that was a rivalry early on. I mean, it certainly was for the players because it manifested itself in some fisticuffs on the field. But yeah, the Jags rivalry hasn't meant anything in a decade.
I think the Aziz Alshire thing's the biggest thing that ever happened in that rivalry.
True.
Like,
yeah,
that's the biggest moment in that rivalry's history, which again is not even a rivalry. I think that's the perfect analogy for it. It is like a team in your high school's district, yeah, where you're like, I don't have any actual feelings about them, but we play them every year, so I hate them.
Yeah.
That
would you have the Colts as their top rival?
Yeah, I think so. Just because, again, they're the two more competitive teams consistently in the AFC South, which is funny to think, but like the Texans,
well, that's
they are more consistently competitive than all the other teams.
That's
in this
part
division
of the problem, though, with AFC South, because when you look at it, I mean, the Jaguars came into the league in the 90s. The Titans came into the league as the Tennessee Titans in the 90s. The Texans came in 2002. And the Colts, before the AFC South was formed in 2002, were in the AFC East with a whole other group of teams. So I don't think you could argue this division has less history than any other division in the NFL. So it's kind of hard to have those heated, you know, yeah, Washington, Dallas, Philly, Dallas type rivalries.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And I think a lot of the Colt rivalry is just the fact that even though there was a lot of years where there was good games between the Colts and the Texans, the Colts and Peyton Manning
were smacking
your ass. So your rivalry is more just because you despise how much they conquered.
Yeah, that wasn't a rivalry in Peyton Manning.
That
there.
Division.
You hated them, but it wasn't a rivalry.
For a few years.
It's kind of like Texans-Ravens now. Like, we don't like the Ravens, but the Ravens are kicking your ass every time. It's not a rivalry.
I mean, I think there's a few years, like those Matt Schaub years where he was thrown for 5,000 yards. You could argue there's a little bit of like a rivalry between the Colts, because I think that division at the time, the Texans were competing relatively well with the Colts. Mm. But as far as other teams in the division, like we were saying, it's your district. Like, you hate them because you went to the same house party and you got into a scuffle. So that's what it is. Like,
I think for a future,
is that the Cortland Finnegan fight?
Oh, yeah.
This is the Cortland Finnegan
fight. I think at some point, maybe in the summer when we have nothing else to talk about, we just need to ask Cam to come up with like little anecdotes for what each division is. Like, this division's like, and then the house party with the fight. You got time, Cam. You can think of them between now
I'll
and
get
like
to it.
June. Yeah, don't rush. All right, when we get back on the bullpen, we're overdue for a break here. Let's talk some college football after the play. playoffs are now set with the final four going into action this Thursday and Friday. That when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back into ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. We were saying some hurtful things to each
Bully
other.
Bully B-Mac.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, John. I stand by what I said, but I'm sorry. So maybe I don't stand by it. But ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5 is the Bullpen with myself, Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, and Sean Mapes to my right, John Belmer behind the glass. And if you want to join in on the conversation, you can hit us up on the HRMP text line, either call or text 713-780-3776. We've talked a lot of Texans, so certainly if you have thoughts there, we'll take them right now. Let's talk some college football playoffs because it kind of the trend, with the exception of the Texas game, of course, continued of a lot of non-competitive games, or at least games with final margins that made it look non-competitive. But what were your overall thoughts and impressions of what we've seen in this last round, the semifinal, I guess, no, quarterfinal round, in a round where the four teams that had the byes all lost? We saw kind of a trend in the first round where all the home teams won and won convincingly. Now in the second round, you had all the teams with a bye, maybe the rest versus rust conversation, all lose. Your overall thoughts on what we saw over Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Or, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
I know, right?
I know. It's yeah. Anyway.
The New Year's being in the middle of the week is crazy. I thought that we got pretty good games all for the most part. I mean, you had Ohio State basically ascending into a level
that was the biggest,
like,
yeah.
That where it's like that is the least interesting game, like as far as who's gonna win.
It was like 30-0 before you blinked.
Yeah, but at a certain point, it was just like amazing. It was an amazing performance by Ohio State. Sure. Where you're just like, oh my god, who are these guys?
Good luck. Who gets to face them?
Yeah. God, yeah. You're screwed.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that one.
I think that Boise State and obviously Arizona State, but I think they both like acquitted themselves nicely. I mean, they're both double-digit underdogs, multiple score underdogs going into this game. So that's where like part of the like all the bye teams lost thing doesn't resonate with me, because I think three out of the four were all underdogs anyway. Which yeah. Some of that is to do with the seating, which they can change, or when they change the format, it'll change anyway. But I think overall, the quarterfinals were obviously a much, much better round than the first round.
Yeah, you mentioned Boise State, Penn State. I think what gets lost in the score, because the score obviously looks like Penn State rolled, yeah, but that's a three-point game in the third quarter, and obviously things kind of snowballed on Boise State towards the end. But yeah, I mean, obviously Texas, Arizona State was really close, closer than Sean and I would have liked. Certainly, I did not think we were going to be talking about a Texas win when they were facing 4th and 12. But thank you to Matthew Golden for that double move to get open.
Non-believer,
non-believer, yeah, 2%er. And then you know Notre Dame, Georgia. I think the conversation will be how much Notre Dame dominated, which is fair. But really, you're talking about like a three-play sequence, because yeah. Overall, like you look at the stats, like total yards, first down, it's either even or Georgia led it.
Yeah, they scored, 17 points in a minute?
It should have been 6-3 going to half. And let's talk about that conversation, because that's been a topic with Kirby Smart deciding to pass with 30 seconds left in a freshman quarterback making his first start since high school on the field for him against that Notre Dame defense, because it was 6-3 Notre Dame at the time. They get the strip sack. First play after that's a touchdown. Georgia obviously comes out and takes a knee. Then opening kickoff of the second half, Notre Dame returns for a touchdown. Game over. It's like a four-play. It went from this game is super even. It's a slugfest. It's a defensive game to the game's over off of four plays that all kind of snowballed based on Kirby Smart's decision to be aggressive there with 30 seconds left in the first half. Well,
no, and that's the thing too. Like Notre Dame just did the perfect job of capitalizing on mistakes. When Georgia made a mistake, Notre Dame made him pay for it. Because like you said, if you look at the stats, you wouldn't think that Notre Dame would have won this game. But
I mean, it was even. Like, total yards, first downs, those numbers are all, like, either even or it's in the favor of Georgia. Like, first downs was Georgia 16, Notre Dame 14. And then total yards, Georgia also won 296 to 244. Like, yeah. Notre Dame's.
And how many of those are the passing disparity where they're starting sure. a first year or first game starter in Gunnar Stockton and Riley Leonard's a four-year starter who had less than 100 yards passing?
I have it right here, Sean. Passing yardage, Georgia 234, Notre Dame 90. I mean, yeah, Notre Dame it was an impressive defensive performance, but I don't think we can erase any of the questions that we had about their offense. Especially, do we know what Jeremiah Love's status is going into?
I'm not sure.
He left limping with was it a knee injury or ankle injury? I forget. Yeah, it's lower half. But if Jeremiah Love, and look, they've got depth at running back, but if Jeremiah Love is going to miss this game against Penn State, and you're already dealing with a passing game that's lacking because of Riley Leonard's ability to get the ball vertically. I don't know. Like, I don't know if they beat Penn State. I think they have the better defense than Penn State, and I don't trust Penn State in this situation. But if you're compromised in your running game and Riley Leonard's his own problem, then, I mean, I don't know who I'm picking. Like, I'm still probably picking Notre Dame, but I don't feel great about it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's a situation where a guy like Tyler Warren is going to be such a huge factor for Penn State if Notre Dame doesn't have Jeremiah Love, because that's kind of their, you know, big play, best player on offense type of guy where you have the game plan around. And everyone else on Notre Dame, they're all right. Like what I saw out of Faison, Bo Collins is cool. But at a certain point, like, you need the kind of X factor, the future NFL players. You just need future NFL players. And Tyler Warren is 100% that. And, yeah, I think that's a situation where Notre Dame might be hitting against the ceiling of what their offense can do or how far they can go with this offense that they have. Because, you know, Penn State isn't exactly like 2019 LSU out there, but they can make big plays happen running the ball. They can get it to Warren. Drew Aller just does not make mistakes. So they can kind of play that kind of complementary football that they need to do, that Notre Dame can do. It's just they don't have the offensive upside that Penn State does.
Well, and I guess to bring it back to the Georgia game too, Georgia had the most drops of all.
Oh, they've had that all year.
They had at least
they had some comedic ones.
Had at least one that was a drop for a touchdown. So
Arian, just, man, he's such a big play threat. And we haven't even mentioned the damn walk on running into the referee that cost them 15 yards when they would have been first and goal and got moved back and they settled for a field goal. I'm not blaming him for the loss. I'm just saying. Like, finally, Arian Smith makes a big play, he loses 15 yards because the damn walk-ons on the white part of the field and runs into the referee. So, I think the Notre Dame Penn State matchup. Part of the reason I'm looking forward to it is because I'm not sure what either one of them has proven yet, and this feels like I'm total SEC honk trying to run down the other.
Nobody.
Yeah, they played nobody. It just means more. But you look at their past. I mean, obviously, Penn State gets to face SMU in a home game, and then Boise State. I mean, I don't know if you'd argue they're the weakest team in the field, but certainly in that conversation. And then, obviously, Notre Dame gets to knock off Indiana in a home game and then face Georgia without their starting quarterback. So I'm not sure. It's not so much that I'm saying they didn't earn it or it's a lesser path or whatever. It's just I'm not sure who they actually are yet.
No, it's a team where we question what they can do in big games, and they made the Final Four of the college football playoffs without playing a big game.
Yeah,
They didn't make the playoff schedule, so they're beating the teams. They're beating the teams that are put there for them to beat. But it's just like, who are they actually beating?
Yeah, like
it's not a criticism against them. It's just like I don't know how to interpret what they've done so far.
Yeah, because there's buts
for everything.
Yeah, but.
But
we need to go to break.
Ohio State's probably going to crush Texas.
Oh yeah, all this to say that Ohio State, if they come out playing how they played the last two games, this thing is over, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Hand them the trophy right now.
Whew, man, that was unbelievable. The way they hammered Tennessee and Oregon. I mean, look, Texas is one of those teams. Is one of the few teams I think if they were to play their A game could be in a game with Ohio State in their A game. The problem is Texas rarely hits an A game.
Also, Ohio State's A game is pretty freaking good.
I
Ryan.
Know. I said
it's pretty freaking
I said
good.
I said in a game with Ohio State.
But they still
State.
Want to fire Ryan Day.
Well, he's not getting fired.
Well, no.
I mean, but the people were saying he had to win a national title to save his job. There's no chance. Though. I mean, I didn't think that was true at the time. Especially, Sean.
In Ohio State fans' defense, this is kind of why they're mad they lost to Michigan.
Because they can do this.
Yes.
They can do this. They didn't do it all season.
Yeah. And then, you see, of course you saw Dan Lanning, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. What a petty little B-move that
was.
Hey,
wasn't our day-to-day? That happens.
Wasn't
their day against Michigan, I guess.
That was such a – look, Dan Lanning's done a lot of great things at Oregon. That was a – hard B word move. I did not like that at all. All right, we're way overdue for a break here, but we had to get some college football in. When we return, it is time for the hype train. ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.